Content in this episode may contain information and discussions of grief and trauma, childbirth, sexual assault, racial discrimination, pregnancy, violence, or mental health and more, which some listeners could find triggering. This podcast is not intended for young listeners, so please listen responsibly. If you find yourself being triggered or affected by the content of this podcast, please reach out to a mental health professional in your area or call a national hotline for support. Welcome to the Twisted Sisterhood Podcast, hosted by Ashley Mitchell and Kelsey Vandervliet Ranyard, a podcast by birth moms for birth moms to give a platform to a silenced voice in the triad. You can find us on Instagram at Twisted Sisterhood Podcast, on Facebook at Twisted Sisterhood, and Twitter at Birth Mom Podcast. Give us a follow and use our hashtag, There Goes the Sisterhood. And if they don't give you a seat at the table, bring a folding chair.
Welcome back to the Twisted Sisterhood Podcast. Your co-host, Ashley Mitchell, coming at you from quarantine. I've lost all track of time. And when I walk outside, my eyes don't know how to adjust to the light. I'm joined here with my co-host.
That's just the hangover.
Joined here with my co-host, my smart-ass co-host, Kelsey in California.
Hi. I don't know what week it is, and it troubles me.
It troubles me.
And we have a guest today.
We do have a guest. We convinced somebody to come and talk to us. We're so excited though for our guest Mathani. She is a dear friend, and of course a fellow birth mother coming at us from Texas.
Hey y'all.
Yeah, thank you for y'all. Of course she did. Mathani, thank you so much for joining us. We've been connected for a while now on social media, and we're just really excited for you to come and share your story. And we have lots to talk about. So if you would just take a couple of minutes and introduce yourself and let all the ladies know who you are and kind of your journey through this process of becoming a birth mother.
Yeah. Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me. Super excited. Love you both. Excited to be here. So I'm about almost 3.5 years post-placement now. I placed in November of 2016. Found out I was pregnant right around this time, actually, 4 years ago. And I mean, I was like, shit, all right, I guess I'm having a baby.
So that happened.
As one does. That happened.
Pretty much knew I didn't want to be a parent, wasn't ready to be a parent at all. And I had kind of been around adoption, like at church. Like I knew people from church who had adopted before. I'd never met a birth parent ever. So as far as that side of the story, that was a little bit scary for me. But I had seen enough to want to at least explore the option. Went to like a crisis pregnancy center, got a bunch of different pamphlets, found the agency that I ended up sticking with, found a family, and I didn't really have a ton, like a list. I didn't have a list of things that I was looking for particularly. I just wanted them to love my baby well. And I wanted them to love each other because I believed that if they had like a healthy marriage, that would reflect in the way they care for the child, my daughter. And I wanted them to be very family oriented. I didn't care if they had any kids or anything like that. That I didn't mind, but as long as they had a pretty close knit family and a diverse community, because my daughter is mixed. And so it was important to me for her to have that in her life.
So Mathani, you live in Texas now, and the agency that you worked with is in Texas.
Yes.
But is that where you're from? Tell me, like, because I know a little bit about your story. So I know some of your background definitely played a role in kind of your decision and wanting to break some cycles. So can you just share with everybody just a little bit about that? Because I think it plays a huge role in some of your decision-making process for sure.
Absolutely. So I was born in Kenya, lived there till I was 10, and then my bio family and I moved to the US in 2002, and we lived in California. And so that's where I lived up until 2015 when I moved to Texas. And so I grew up in a single parent home. So I saw kind of how hard that can be, you know, that it's possible. And I have so much respect for single parents, single moms, single dads. But I, you know, when I was faced with this unplanned pregnancy, it just wasn't for me. Like, I was just like, I didn't feel like I had that kind of strength to parent. And so, not that adoption was the easy way out by any means.
Right.
At all.
Sure.
But parenting wasn't for me at the time. I think part of it was fear of like repeating any mistakes that my mom had made. I mean, I'm in therapy now and I'm dealing with some mommy issues for sure. So I want to kind of like break that cycle. You know, I just want to, you know, a different life for my daughter. Like, you know, one that I didn't get to have. And so.
What did post-placement look like for you, especially that first year?
I pretty much was kind of in denial in a sense. I didn't realize it at the time. I thought I was grieving. But the first 2 years of like post-placement, I was like gung-ho, like, I'm amazing, you know, I'm strong, you know, all kind of the stuff that's thrown at you as a birth mom, you know, you're brave, you made selfless, the best decision, you know, you're selfless, you know?
Yeah.
And I still believe those things. I think they're true. Absolutely. But I was not dealing with the flip side, you know, the loss, the grief, the fact that I left the hospital without a baby in my arms, you know, like that's not, that's hard. And so, it wasn't until like a year after I placed that I even like announced it on social media that like, oh, I'd had a baby and like I made this adoption plan, because I just wasn't ready to deal with the crazies out there, you know. And when I did get a lot of support, but also a lot of hate. And so, I mean, I'm glad.
Who did you get the hate from?
Strangers.
Name names.
Just throw them right under the bus.
Literally, like, trolls from the freaking forest came out, and I was like, I don't even know who the fuck you are. Like,
yeah.
Have we met? Are we friends? Just, you know, so just.
What's their address? It's fine.
So, but in that same breath, so Mathani, you placed with Gladney, and obviously you had mentioned that your child was mixed, and so, I mean, we'll just call out the race elephant in the room, right? Yeah. And so you got a lot of positive from them, and obviously, you know, that propaganda of you doing this amazing thing. How much did that play a role in maybe that first year or so of denial? I mean, I know that you spoke on panels and things like that. Do you feel like the agency definitely took advantage of the opportunity to use someone of race and color to just kind of share propaganda? I mean, what did that look like? Because you were very much connected with them, and so you have all this hate a year later, but during that first year without processing a whole lot of the grief, was that because you were put, I mean, what kind of role did the agency play in that?
Yeah. So I will say that my caseworker, my post-adoption caseworker, was very good at checking in with me before. Anytime she asked me if I wanted to do a panel, she would check in with me like, hey, how are you doing? You know, are you, she pushed counseling on me for like 2 years until I finally said yes. And I'm thankful for that, you know, because I finally said yes and went and did it. I viewed it as an opportunity to just share my story, and for me, I think too, it helped me process in those first 2 years kind of what had happened, and then when I was finally able to grieve, to me those panels and like share my story was a part of me in a weird way grieving. Does that make sense? I don't know.
Yeah, I have the same kind of experience.
Yeah,
because I did panels for organizations. I would never touch with a 10-foot pole again.
Yeah.
Not knowing.
Right.
But yeah, that helped me kind of get the bullshit out.
Right.
Kind of like, okay, move on to the real,
yeah,
real grief, yeah, grief work. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I know since, and I still definitely do panels. I do less now. I'm more self-aware to where mm-hmm. I'm at. So mm-hmm. I'm not doing them like every month like I was before.
Mm-hmm.
And also life has gotten busier. I'm a lot more honest about where I'm at, yeah, in my grieving when I share my story now with, you know, whether it's a Gladney with their orientation days or wherever. It's much less this perfectly packaged, you know.
I think sometimes, yes, maybe it's pressure from the agency and that propaganda mm-hmm. piece, but mm-hmm. also sometimes it's also just the nature of the beast. You're sitting there at a panel in front of all these adoptive parents, and
yeah,
when you're in front of your child's adoptive parents, you're saying all the right things to like mm-hmm. either impress them or just be on your best birth mom behavior or just
right
have something good to say. So yeah, you're kind of lumping all of them together, I think, mm-hmm. just subconsciously.
Yeah.
And you're just, things are great. Things are wonderful.
Like, yeah.
Until you develop past that grief-wise, right, you're going to keep humming that tune because,
yeah,
there, you know, you have mm-hmm. to like know yourself better to be able to honestly right participate in those things.
Yes. Yeah, so for sure.
Tell me during the pregnancy and all that, let's mm-hmm. talk about baby daddy for a second.
Yeah.
What was that relationship like? You said, you know, your child is mixed. And so what, yes, like kind of what was that? Did that play a role? Like, what did that kind of look like through the process of choosing adoption, et cetera?
Oh, man. So the reason I moved to Texas was baby daddy's family. I was really good friends with his sister from college, like 10 years ago, 9 years ago, and just stayed in touch with them over the years, become very, very close. And they were like, you should move to Texas, because at this point I was essentially estranged from bio family. Again, mommy issues. And so I was like, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I didn't really have anything tie me down to California. So I was like, all right, bet, let's move to Texas. And so moved here in 2015. And then within months, was pregnant with baby daddy.
Wait, and who is baby daddy?
Elsie, quit trying to make everybody name
I'm
drop.
I'm a shit stirrer.
What are you doing?
You no, not that. His name. What's the real, you.
Yes, so baby forgot. Daddy is my friend's brother.
There it is.
My friend's brother, yeah.
Okay. I just wanted to connect the dots. Sorry. Okay, go ahead.
She is in a mood today, I tell you.
In a mood. So baby daddy was my friend's brother. And so, it just happened. It is what it is. Suddenly, I was the evil witch who ruined their family. and there was definitely feigned support from their side. A little bit of coercion to choose a family from their church, because they had a church, like the parents were pastor, or he's pastor and whatever. And so support, but like, not really. It was.
Did you pick a family from their church?
No. Oh, hell no.
So he was kind of like golden boy status with his, yeah, family and his community. And
yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
And so,
so they wanted to handle the situation and kind of control what you picked and how you guys did it.
Yeah, in a sense. I mean, they would ask me questions of what I wanted, but I always felt like,
so they could do the opposite.
That was like this like hidden agenda.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, okay.
They would, you know, just make weird comments. And like, yeah.
And they were against you guys parenting together? I mean, was that a pretty clear conversation or not necessarily?
Not necessarily. I think they would have probably preferred that, but I wanted nothing to do with that. I think, yeah, that's one thing I knew pretty clearly is, like, I didn't want to parent with him at all. I mean, he wanted me to have an abortion when I told him I was pregnant. So I was like, well, great. That's my answer.
Okay.
And that's not something I wanted. And so they wanted to have a part. And I think even in that time, I did want them to have a part in helping me make the adoption plan because they were all that I had. You know, they were like my family. And so I was kind of tunnel vision, like, okay, this is what needs to happen. I didn't realize until I was out of it as to who they really were and how they really didn't have my best interest.
Okay. And but you had left bio family, moved, yeah, and so they really, yeah, did kind of become your only people. Yeah. So you relied heavily on,
yeah,
their opinions and how they were supporting you. Yeah. Absolutely. Okay.
Absolutely. You know, ultimately I made the choice to, as far as like picking the family, as far as like the interview process, meeting the, my daughter's family, like they came with me to dinner and whatnot. Okay. They helped me put together interview questions. They speaking of race, I, you know, wanted to ask about, like, you know, their community and diversity.
Sure.
And they were like, oh, that doesn't matter. As long as they love Jesus.
Oh my God.
And I was like,
honey. You know what?
Yeah.
Sorry. Black girl, we're white and it doesn't matter.
That's fine.
And we would know and you wouldn't. And that's
wouldn't.
And Kelsey and I are literally the whitest people on the planet. So when we're when we're shocked, yeah, by that, you know, yeah, that it's bad.
Honestly.
So I know, Mithani, that was a huge factor going in, is making, yeah, sure that your child grew up with this diversity, knowing, mm-hmm, that race was gonna be, mm-hmm, an issue for them.
Yeah.
And maybe a challenge, and maybe something that they were going to have to, because you were going to, odds are that you're picking a white family to place with.
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
so that this would be a whole new bag of whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And making sure that they had that in your child's life was a key factor for you,
right,
when choosing,
right,
a family.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they didn't want to talk about it.
What did you say? What was your response to that?
Honestly, I don't remember defending myself in that moment. I think I've just, okay, brushed it off. I'm a 9, so I'm growing, but yeah, I'm an Enneagram 9.
Bless the nines.
It's okay.
All you nines out there that can't defend yourselves in the moment because they, yeah, don't want any controversy. It's fine.
Just, yep, call me. Literally.
Just call Kelsey or I and we'll take care of it.
Literally.
Okay, so you're in this process. They're pretty involved in this process with you, biological father. His family's, mm-hmm, kind of involved in this process.
Yes.
At some point, has that continued, that relationship, that open adoption relationship? Tell me, so take us to where we are now. You've picked this family, and how in 3.5 years has that developed, changed? What is his role? What is your role? What does that look like for you?
Yes. So I mean, I always knew that I wanted an open adoption. I didn't know what that would look like necessarily. But I knew I wanted to have contact, visits, you know, whatever. And so my daughter's parents and I were pretty much on the same page. Initially, we agreed to just like one visit a year, and then that kind of evolved to 2 visits a year now, give or take. This year, because of Corona, we probably will only have one.
Yeah.
Which
is a lot, yeah.
Yeah.
Are they, they're in Texas as well?
They are.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you're in the same, yeah, state. Okay.
Yeah. So in the same state. And so we text pretty regularly, like her mom and I, and we have like FaceTime dates and like, so she's very, aware of who I am. Like they have pictures of me in her room, like they talk about me to her. So that, you know, makes me feel good. I'm like, okay, I'm not just like this. I'm not the weird, you know, family friend. You know, I'm burnt.
The weird aunt or something. You're not the aunt, quote unquote.
You know, and so I haven't, you know, talked to birth father since the hospital.
Oh, okay.
When he came and you know,
so he was there. Her.
Yeah, so he was there. Okay. Not in like the room or anything, so I was like, no. but after I gave birth, like he came and like saw her.
That's okay. I've given birth 3 times and John had to like beg me to be in the room when we gave birth to our children. And I was like, yeah, you stay behind my shoulders and it's fine. And he's like, you don't think I know what's going on now? And I was like, right. It doesn't matter. Get your ass behind my shoulders. You can help hold the leg because you are not seeing what's
That's
going on.
That's hilarious.
So it's fine. If people aren't in the room with you, it's fine. It's fine.
I don't know if there's any contact on that, and I never ask, and I don't honestly don't care. I just want what's best, you know, for our daughter. And so if that happens, great. You know, I think she deserves to know who he is if she wants to. And so I'm just going to do me, you know.
Yeah. But that will be separate from you.
Yes, it will not be together. Okay. Yeah. I cut off, like, ties and contact with their family. They just were not good for me, and
I was just had to go.
So bless them. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Go with God.
Go with God.
So,
how have you seen them kind of adjust? I mean, do they call you and like, what do we do with their hair? Or like, do they have like questions about race and things like that? Community? Like, are you kind of their go-to for that kind of stuff? Or what does that look like?
No. So that, no, which I'm glad, cause I don't even know what to do with my own hair. So,
thank you for saying that, by the way.
Yes. I mean,
for owning honestly, that, like, I appreciate that.
Yeah, for sure. I do know, like, she watches a lot of YouTube videos, or they do, and then they also have people of color in their church that they go to. They read a lot too, like they're big readers. So I know that they're, you know, doing everything that they can to make, you know, to do this right, you know, to do this the best of their ability.
Do they have other children? Have they talked to you about potentially adopting again? What does that look like?
I don't have the other children. We haven't had that conversation. I think I vaguely remember asking them at some point, but I do not remember. Sorry, y'all. I know you'll be listening. I don't remember. So, yeah, I don't know. And honestly, like, I've thought about it. Like, would I want her to have siblings? But they have a lot of, she has a lot of friends. You know, which isn't the same as siblings, but she does have a lot of, she has a lot of adoptee friends too.
Oh, that's cool.
Like in their community, like there's a lot of like adopt in the church. And so I know she'll grow up with other kids like her. Like they'll be able to like share that bond and grieve together and, you know. So I'm thankful for that for sure.
So you're getting ready to get married.
Yes, girl.
When all this COVID crap gets lifted,
when Rojo makes her leave.
So, of course, when you're, you know, dating and getting involved and getting really serious with somebody, you know, you have this conversation about, oh, and by the way, there's this other kid out there that like is also a part of this. And so how has your fiance played a role kind of in that? Like, what did that look like? Because I know so many birth moms, that's like a huge question that they ask, like, how are you supposed to date and tell people you're a birth mom? And like, are they a part of your open adoption? And then thinking about having other kids and all that. So kind of what did that look like for you when you guys started dating? And what kind of role does he play now?
I told him about my daughter on our first date, which I was not expecting to do at all. He was married before and has a son, and he told, like, volunteered that information to me, like, on our first date. And so I just kind of felt comfortable. I just talking to him, I just felt like I could trust him, like, right away. And I mean, he doesn't understand what it's like to be a birth parent, so he's never gonna, like, be, you know, have all the right things to say, but he's been very supportive. Just listen to me on days when I'm just like, fuck, this is hard, you know? He got to meet her last year at our last visit in November, and that was awesome. Huge. He was so nervous, but they were.
I kind of feel like that's like the ultimate, like,
yeah,
if you pass this test,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
we're like mated for life, like, because
yes.
I feel like so many birth moms, like, and I know this isn't true for everyone. I know birth moms are like, any guy I'm dating, like my fan or women I'm dating or whatever, like everyone, mm-hmm, like you meet this family right away. Mm-hmm. But for me and Kelsey, I don't know what it's looked like, but for me it was like, if we do this, like, you have to be in, because I don't do this with anybody. Like, I do a lot of things with people, but I don't do this. Like,
I didn't, like, I don't take anybody. I mean, I'm married now, but he hasn't even met him. He will. It's just, we live so far away, but it was always a thing where it's like, I don't care if we're just dating, you're not meeting, if, unless we're married.
Yeah.
Not even engaged. So. Because so I've been engaged a couple times. You have to pass the final test.
So I did. Lydia loved him. Like, they had, like, he's great with kids anyway. So it was just very easy. Awesome. It was very warming. I was like, all right, go ahead. I'm ready. Let's have a baby. JK. No, so, not yet.
And he, so your fiance is white.
Yes.
So he's going to be in all the mix of all of the things with this.
Yes.
That's so cool. So we passed that test.
We did. And so now we just got to wait till next year to get married because
COVID.
Life. Because the Rona.
Because Corona. Yeah. Ugh, Corona.
So I know. She's the worst.
Yeah. I love that it's a she.
It's Miss Rona. Rona.
She's the worst.
Miss Rona.
Miss Rona.
Okay. You guys apparently are watching more memes than I'm watching on social media. Because I'm definitely blaming a man for it.
Hey, Ashley. Hey, Ashley, who watches memes?
I was just going to say.
Like, through your stories, you're watching them, you're looking at them.
Okay.
Come on, people. Get it together.
And she takes a sip of her Coors Light. Who watches memes?
Who watches memes?
Sometimes they're like action based, no?
Yeah.
Yeah. See? You know.
Yeah, you can have a video meme.
Yeah.
Isn't that a GIF?
That's kind of a GIF.
I don't know.
That's true.
I don't know the language these kids are using.
These kids these days with their technology.
Too much.
All I know is that Tiger King is ruling the universe right now. I'm not Rona.
Still haven't watched Rona. It.
Don't do it, Kelsey.
Yes, do it.
No.
It is the epitome of white trash. Like, why would you not want to watch it?
Doesn't it take place in Florida?
I feel like you're judging white people right now, Mathani.
I'm judging white people.
I am.
I don't think that white people are judged enough.
Please,
honestly.
Please put this in the podcast.
If white people were judged more, they wouldn't do the things that they do.
Well, people are like so shocked, and I'm like, you've met humans before, right? This is the epitome of what our nation looks like right now. Like, why are you shocked?
Doesn't Tiger King take place in Florida?
Oklahoma.
Oh, Oklahoma? Really?
Yeah.
Okay, because you know what I heard something that, I thought it was Florida for some reason.
The Sooner State!
It's so Florida, though. It's so Florida, though, right?
There is some Florida things about aspects. There are people, I think, from Florida in it.
You know what I heard? I heard that the way we see Florida, like the way the U.S. sees Florida, is the way the world sees the U.S.
Oh, poor Florida. Poor sad Florida. I agree, though.
So true.
People are always like, I want to move to Florida. I'm like, you do you, girl, but I ain't never going to Florida.
I don't want to get murdered prematurely.
And you're not going to my hurricane van. Come on. And I'm like, oh. You could break off and just float away and it's fine. No one would care. I'm kidding. If you're in Florida, we love you. It's fine. Mathani, we love your story so much. We love you. We've been following you. You're our people. I wish we were doing this in person. I can't wait to see you when all of this lifts. I know I'm going to be in your neck of the woods this fall, and so I look forward to seeing you in person. But with our guests, we always love to ask one question, and that is, what do you think has been the biggest block in your healing in moving forward that you could share with all of our Twisted Sisterhood that is listening?
Yes.
Something that was a real block for you and kind of how you moved through it to just kind of help them maybe find breakthrough, something that they're working on.
Yeah. For me, it was, I mean, I already shared earlier that it took me 2 years to realize I was grieving, and it's because I was always being put up on this kind of pedestal of like bravery and selflessness and all the good things, all the butterflies and rainbows. When I was pregnant, you know, we had this class called grief, and it was had another name, but it was basically a grief class to kind of prepare us of what we might be feeling afterwards. Obviously nothing can really prepare you until you're in the throes of it. So I knew that it's okay for me to be sad. It's okay for me to be angry, yada, yada, yada. But I never allowed myself to feel that way because I felt guilty. I was like, you know, I made this decision. I did what was best, you know, not just for my daughter, but for myself. I never felt like anyone truly sat down with me and said, hey, are you feeling the bad things? Mm-hmm. You know, because I never... Again, I said, I'm a 9, so I'm never going to volunteer that information. I'm just going to bottle it all up until it explodes one day. Yeah. And I'm working on that. That's not healthy. If I could go back, I would, you know, tell myself, like, hey, I'm going to need you to do some crying. I'm going to need you to do some yelling, something, you know, because this isn't all just a cakewalk.
I think there's so many of us that have felt that and walked that, really coming into this, really, and I love what you said, because you're like, you know, it is beautiful and selfless and brave and amazing, but when that's all you know and that's all you've attached this to, you really do block yourself from being, and you just can't ever move forward into any other space if you can't get right with the other stuff too.
Yeah.
And so I love, you know, you're 3.5 years in and you're doing the work. I mean, hell, I didn't start doing my work until, I mean, I'm 14 years in and still like just like going to trauma therapy and like,
right.
So I think that's amazing. But I love, I mean, the encouragement for women to get the work done, right? Like, I mean, if there's birth moms listening that are just in those first couple of years, this step is like vital. That mental health and that therapy, if they have access to it, it's huge. Mm-hmm. You guys, thank you so much for being here. As always, we love you. We're standing with you. Just a shit show, as always. Mathani, thank you for keeping us right on track with how we always are. And sharing your story. Everyone that's listening, please make sure you go and follow her. She's fantastic. She shares amazing stuff. And we'll have definitely more discussion about therapy and things like that following this episode. So let's hear it, Mathani. Close us out.
Yeah, she did.
Lord. Okay.
So we'll see you next time on the Twisted Sisterhood podcast.